The opinions expressed in the following program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.
Family-owned Faro's Pizza underwrites this episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Podcast, newly opened at 901 Gazan Parkway, Southwest Wyoming, and available at 616-483-0002.
We hear things in the deep, dark night. We see things in the shadows, in the corners of our eyes. In mind and dim light, we sense things when they just aren't right. Our dealings are not with human flesh and bone, but rather with an essence that defies even the basic laws of nature, like space and time. These elusive selves challenge our logical minds, forcing us to take faith in the unseen, the unsubstantiated. We cling to theory, statistical inevitability, and the imminent manifestation of mystery. Brought to you by WKTV, I'm your ghost host, Wayne Preston, Curtis Thomas. Welcome to a very special episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast. As always, we ask that you please keep an open mind about things that you might not easily believe as we explore the mysterious. We have a very special guest with us here tonight. She's actually our most popular guest. I don't know if I'm supposed to take favorites or not, but she's been here more than anyone. I think, if I counted correctly, a total of 10 times between... She also co-hosted a couple times, but she is a Michigan-based paranormal author, so we're going to talk about her books, we're going to talk about her magazines. I really don't know how to describe her each time, because she's into so many different things, like cryptozoology, paranormal, ufology, prehistoric creatures. So, please welcome Shatan Noir.
Well, thank you, and it's always a pleasure to come back and be on your show. I always love the studio, and it feels like home when I come back onto your podcast. So I always enjoy doing this show. So thank you very much for having me back for, can we say it? Halloween,
right? Ooh. By the time this comes out, you guys would have done your trick-or-treating, but we're right before Halloween here. We like to have Shatan here for Halloween.
It's my most favorite time of the year.
It's traditional for us to invite Shatan here. So I never know, like I say, what you're into. I used to say you were into cryptozoology for 25 years, but I've been saying that for about 5 years now. So I don't tell us some
well,
of your history.
I still am. Okay. Like you said, I'm a cryptozoologist. I have been interested in cryptozoology since I was probably 9 years old. I'm not giving away my age.
Oh, yeah.
Paranormal investigator, been involved and interested in the paranormal since I was nine. Ufology, really, for me, that one, because I think it's a given that UFOs and alien life forms are out there. So for me, I don't dwell on that one as much, because I think that's a proven fact. When the U.S. government says, yeah, we admit, TikTok video, yeah, we got caught, smack us on the hand.
Yeah.
So I think ufology, there's more to explore with it, certainly, but I'm not as interested in it because I think it's a proven fact. What I am interested in is, with the cryptozoology aspect of it, how many of these crypto reports do we get of these creatures? How many of those are actually alien creatures from another world? That's what interests me. UFOs, you know, grays, greens, everybody's seen them. We have hundreds and thousands of reports of them. Not so interested, but are they Bigfoots? Are they dogmen? Is it Mothman? Are any of these, you know, potentially also extraterrestrials? That interests me. But you know, I've always had a lifelong passion and interest in prehistoric creatures and dinosaurs. So that includes my favorite, my prehistoric marine reptiles are lake monsters. Rock hounding and going fossil hunting, all of those things are just passions of mine, and I've been able to go forth and do magazines on them, do lectures on all of those subjects, and this is what I do. This is what I love. This is what I'm passionate about.
Yeah, you bring up some good points about maybe some of these things are interconnected. I mean, you get reports of seeing Bigfoot mm-hmm. about the same, and then people report seeing UFOs at the same time. So some of these things, who knows if they're interdimensional right. or what. But so I talked about you being an author, so we need to talk about your books. And I own three of them. And I started out with To Fight Fire with Fire. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about that before. And then I picked up Lake Monsters and Creatures of the Great Lakes. And then I picked up Mothman. I think maybe you have a different cover.
Yes. So when I took the book back from the original publisher because of inactivity, I changed the name and changed the cover. So this is one of the old guys.
Okay.
But the new title of the book is Flying Creatures of the Midwest Beyond Mothman. And it has more of a teal cover with a gargoyle kind of looming out of the trees.
So did you design that cover?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So. And then you do some of the drawings. And.
Oh, yeah, I do. Most of them, probably, right? All of my books, all of my publications, unless somebody else writes an article for my magazines, I do all of my own photography. I do all of my own drawings. I'm, you know, kind of a stickler about that for my own purposes, because I want to make sure that the pictures are accurate and I'm actually depicting what the article is talking about. So that is something that I'm kind of a stickler about. So I'm always traveling. I do a lot of traveling, always going to different locations and getting pictures of stuff so that I have a huge photo database that I can apply to my magazines.
Yeah, I try to follow you on Facebook, but I never know what state you're going to be at, what Paracon, or I know Detroit does the thing for the Detroit Nain Rouge, don't
yes,
they?
Yes, yes.
And then you Mothman does a thing down in.
Yep.
Was I was Virginia, actually. Or where is that? West Virginia?
So, West Virginia in Point Pleasant has the Mothman Festival. I presented there this year.
Okay.
Which was actually really nice this year because it was a cooler weekend. Usually it's 90 degrees there and it was in the 70s. Oh my God, it was so nice. But on Saturday there, we had 25,000 people.
Oh, wow.
And then the next day, because it downpoured for most of the early morning and then kind of, you know, lightened up a little bit to us, gentle drizzle, we only had about 5,000. But if you can imagine the downtown main stretch for Mothman Festival, I want to say is about 5 blocks.
Okay.
Because I walked it uh-huh. with my little dogs that were with me and with my best friend. And having 25,000 people wow. there. I mean, people were waiting in line for bathrooms, food, the Mothman Museum for like an hour at a time. So, but we got to sit and watch a lot and talk to other presenters. And so it was a great weekend there. So, and I have to thank Jeff Walmsley for having me as a presenter down there and Steve Ward because they do a great job of running that event with that many people right. coming in and dealing with and all the little extras. And yeah, it was wonderful.
So we're talking about Mothman and attending the event that they have down there for that. And they had a sculpture too of the Mothman.
So that is a permanent fixture that is right there in the little alleyway right next to the Mothman Museum. And he's on display 24/7 all year long. Everybody, there was a line down the block to take pictures with Mothman, but luckily I've done this before. So with my best friend there, my personal assistant, I was like, we'll go in on Friday and that's when we'll get pictures with everything. So we got pictures with, you know, all with the statue in the museum, with, you know, the people that I hang out with and do things with. And so having that knowledge that if you go Friday, it's pretty dead there. So we were able to grab a quick lunch and sit and, you know, talk to people and eat our lunch and, you know, take pictures. But come Saturday morning, like literally like the waitresses at our hotel were telling us, oh, it's 7 o'clock. You guys better get going if you want to get a parking spot down there. And we're like, but we're presenters. So they're like, you better get it going. Oh, so wow. I like ran out to the car and got down there. And it was, people were already shopping and going through the vendors. So we parked, loaded everything into the wagon that we use, got to our spot for the presenters and set up. And then from, I want to say 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., it was continuous. And then once all the other vendors were like, we're done. We're just done. We're going out to eat. We're done. So then everybody, you know, packed up their stuff and it was like, okay, go do, you know, the stuff for tonight, like the hay rides, and go back to the hotel. And then we were like, okay, tomorrow morning we're getting up even earlier because now people know. But with the rain, it was so much easier. But I also have to give a shout out to Chad Lewis and Kevin Lee Nelson, because that Saturday night, after we left the pizza parlor, I got a flat tire, and they actually came back from the hotel, which was like 3 miles away, and helped us get the tire situation done. Still had to go to the Walmarts in the morning. That had an auto center that was like 2 miles down the road. Get a brand new tire, then get to Mothman. But thanks, guys, for coming and saving this girl.
Right. So. And I love that you put that on Facebook, because I've never been there and I probably won't ever. I don't know. Maybe I'll get there.
It's worth it to go for the festival for one time, at least one time, because if you're into cryptozoology, if you're into high strangeness, if you're into ufology, paranormal, this is a place that you can go, and they have vendors there. They have storefronts there with items, books, everything that you will not find anywhere else. So I made sure to do some shopping on Friday afternoon of things that I knew I wanted, books I knew I wanted. I even got myself a Lake Monster plushie that I wanted to make sure I got before 25,000 people came through and just...
Yeah, I didn't know it was so such a big event.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So Mothman, you know, that's... as far as flying cryptids go, geez, that's not one I'd want to run into, I don't think. They've done X-Files with a Mothman type of thing. But now your magazines, see, I have in my notes, and I know this is not going to be complete at all, because under magazines it says, head writer, owner of Sasquatch Magazine, Sasquatch Digest, and others. And I think "and others" is a complete list.
So after... I think it's been 6 years now that I've been writing the magazines. And after writing content for 6 magazines, 365 days a year, I don't get to do anything else but research and interview people and set up interviews. So I've combined Squatch GQ Magazine with Cryptozoology Digest. The name of my company is still Squatch GQ Publications, but the Cryptozoology Magazine is now Cryptozoology Digest. The Paranormal Magazine is Into the Liminal Abyss Paranormal Magazine. Then there's Dinosauria and Prehistoric Creatures Magazine, and Rockhound and Prospector Magazine. Those are the four that I concentrate on. And then I come out with special books, like I have a doggy cookbook that I come out with once a year where I dress my dogs up as chefs and have all these elaborate cookies that they, you know, have recipes for in the books. And it's my dogs, my friend's poodles, my friend's pugs. And that one's been like a huge seller. And then I'll do like special issues on other, you know, branch off topics. But my main four magazines are the ones that I just talked about. Cryptozoology Digest, Into the Liminal Abyss, Paranormal Magazine, Dinosaurian Prehistoric Creatures, and Rock Hound and Prospector Magazine. And those topics alone keep me busy.
Yeah.
But like I said, they're things that I love and I'm so passionate about. And, you know, if there is a, like, dinosaur attraction that comes into town, I'm there. If there's a gem and mineral fossil show that's anywhere within Michigan or near Michigan, I'm there. Cryptozoology, if it's an event, I'm going to it. Paracons, I try to make it to, you know, as many as I can. And I'm usually toting along my three little dogs with me and kicking and screaming, usually my best friend. but, you know, this is what I do. Right. And, you know, in order to write articles, you have to go places and research things and have that firsthand experience of, you know, because you can read on the internet that a place is haunted and there's so much activity. And then you get there and it's like, could you please do something? Like, just something?
Yeah.
And you just sit there in dead quiet all night long. And it's like, there's no activity to this place.
Yeah.
So I like to be very honest and truthful with my experiences. And that's what I want my readers to enjoy, is that fact that I have researched these places. I have gone there. I know firsthand what to expect.
Right.
There. And that's what I'm going to tell my readers about.
Right. You know, I'm not supposed to endorse any services or products, but I can say you brought some of your magazines in here and these are quality products. Mm-hmm. You're talking about a thick magazine. There's a lot of information.
They're more manual type publications than they are just your average magazine that you'll grab off the news rack and, you know, the pages tear, you know, the ink smears.
Right.
And
this is something that's going to last.
Yes.
You buy just one of those, it's going to last you. Now, one of the magazines you talked about was something about the Into the Liminal Abyss, and that your podcast is High Strangeness.
Yes.
High
Strangeness,
Into the Liminal Abyss.
My original podcast was Into the Liminal Abyss Paranormal Podcast. I decided, because when I took over the magazine company, the title of the paranormal magazine was G Hunter, and I hated that name. Hated it.
Oh.
Because it just, there is a cringe factor to saying that title of the magazine and trying to, you know, get people interested in being interviewed by it. So I changed the name of the magazine into the Liminal Abyss Paranormal Magazine, taking, you know, that from my podcast. And then I had the chance to start a mini podcast back in August or September? Oh, Star and Rhonda are going to be mad at me. I think it was September. Maybe it was August. I'm going to say August. But it's only 15 minutes long. It's every Wednesday afternoon at 5:30. We post the links on my Facebook page. And that podcast is called High Strangeness Into the Liminal Abyss. And on that podcast, I talk about where I'm going to be traveling that weekend or where I've come back from. Different aspects of cryptozoology or the paranormal, or how I think the seasonal weirdness is affecting things. Last night's podcast, I mentioned how our lilac tree is reblooming. And if that's happening, how is this going to disrupt how other plants are producing? And is that going to affect the behavior of the cryptids? So it's, you know, just
interesting.
Food for thought.
Yeah.
That, you know, I don't know if other paranormal or cryptid researchers actually take into account But when you can see it right there in your face, like, no, lilacs bloom in May. Why are you blooming in late October? This is really weird. So.
Okay. So now we did get the titles of your books, these three books, but you also did The Marvelous Misadventures of Tegan Gray, Tegan Meets Bigfoot.
Well, it's actually Tegan versus Bigfoot. So that's one of my children's books. I haven't had time to produce any more children's books, but that is a book that I took my miniature pincher at the time, dressed her up, and the concept of the book is Bigfoot crashes her tea party. And she wants to know what his problem is. So she proceeds to set traps for him all around the yard. And I take photographs of her with her traps made. And then there's usually, I created a Bigfoot. I got a Bigfoot costume and put it on a PVC frame and then would prop it up around the yard and take pictures at different angles. So that is the concept of that book. And finally, at the end, after she's had a conversation with Bigfoot, she invites him to her birthday party. And there's a scene at the end of the book where it's her and her friends who are puppets and the Bigfoot. And the Bigfoot's kind of leaning through the lilac trees. As a side note, I didn't know when I was editing the book, if I would have to do any more photo shoots. So I just left the Bigfoot on the PVC frame and I put him in my house. Now, the side entrance into my house is a glass door wall and a solid glass wall. And the Bigfoot was standing right in front of this. So I had gone somewhere and I had asked my dad to come over and let my dogs out. Well, my dad was not too happy Bigfoot scared him.
Oh, wow.
Because here's this big hairy thing inside of my house. And he's like, what is that? I'm not a hoaxer, but I do photography with my dogs. And those pictures are fake.
So yeah. Mothman and lake monsters. That must have been fun.
It was. And Tegan, my little miniature pincher, is very well trained, and she loves doing the photo shoots. Her children now love doing the photo shoots too. So at some point, I will probably recreate some of the scenes or do more monster books that are kid oriented. But so far, the magazines keep me pretty
busy. Yeah, I imagine. You know, I have other things in my notes. Your accolades. I used to be lead investigator of the Michigan chapter of North American Dogman.
I still am.
Oh, wow.
I still am. We don't get a whole lot of activity just because there's some rumblings going on in the dogman world. And when I do get contacted about investigating, I have a whole 3-page questionnaire that people have to fill out before I will commit to investigating, because there is a whole lot of hoaxing going on, and Dogman seems to be the new, hoax that everybody likes to pull.
Oh, I did see the hoax.
Yeah.
That film. It looked so real. Yeah. They're analyzing it and they're saying, this is probably some kind of a monkey or something, but it was a guy in a suit.
A ghillie suit, yes.
Yeah. So it's North American Dogman, so that's not just Michigan sightings, then that's whole different states in North
America. So the North American Dogman Project, they have different chapters in each state.
Okay.
And then they have a lead investigator. So for Michigan, that's my territory. So okay. I tend to just cover Michigan, but I have friends in Wisconsin and Indiana and Ohio that do investigations too. So I do get, some feedback from them on the activity going on.
Okay.
Beast of Bray Road in Wisconsin is a big one too.
So do you have a paranormal team that you work with also?
So for the past couple of events in years, it's pretty much just been me, the little dogs, and my friend who's an empath.
Okay.
Who also doubles as my personal assistant. And If we're hiking, we take the dogs with us. If it's a paranormal location, generally the dogs stay out in the car with their fans on them, with their cooler sheets. They have it. They are very well taken care of. I don't leave them in a hot car. They have windows. They have fans. They have AC units. They are fine in the car.
So yeah, I'm wondering about these hikes that you go on. What kind of equipment do you have? I mean, do you carry mace, any sort of
When I'm hiking in the woods, generally I pay attention to what the dogs are reacting to. I do take pepper spray or bear mace with me.
Okay.
Now I take a nice solid walking stick with me, mostly for stability, but hey, I can whack somebody in the head with it.
Exactly, something.
I always have my cell phone on my body where it's easily accessible, whether it's for pictures and video or calling 911 or recording what's going on at that current moment. Those are generally the things that I try to keep on my person. And then I will take bottled water with me, granola bars, small first aid kit, bug spray, because when you're in the parking lot, it might not seem that bad, but you get like, you know, a half mile into the woods and you're like, wow, there's a cloud of mosquitoes just eating us alive.
Black flies.
Yep.
So do you carry a backpack? Do you carry stuff in the backpack?
Okay. Yep, a backpack or a fanny pack. I actually invested in, there's a fanny pack that clips around you and then I can attach the dog's leashes to it, to a bungee leash. And then it's got where you can put two water bottles in it, and it's got a zippered pouch for, you know, necessities. Okay.
Yeah, I was curious what you look like. And then you have a good friend that you can get to go with you?
Yeah, she goes with me, you know, I would say a portion of the time, but most of the time it's, if I want to travel, I just pack the dogs up. The only person I usually tell where I'm going is my dad. Because if anybody's going to come rescue me, it's going to be my dad. So,
yeah.
That's the only person I feel, you know, is my dad and my mom. And usually my dad's here in Michigan. So if I need to be rescued, that's who I call.
I know. You're an independent soul. I know you would just take off. You're not going to just, you're not going to keep that from keeping you out of the woods, I don't think. Now, are you connected with Great Lakes Center for Unexplained Events?
So that is my group. It's also my Facebook group where people who are hosting events or have news and stories about cryptid or paranormal encounters here in the Great Lakes area can post it and ask for advice or just, you know, to get the, you know, the word out there. So that is my Facebook group and I run that. So,
and they cover a variety of different paranormal things.
Oh yeah. I cover paranormal, cryptids, ufology, high strangeness. So, under that huge umbrella term of high strangeness, there's a lot of things. So, if I think something is hoaxy, I generally won't approve it. But generally people can post about their cryptid or paranormal events and, any information or news.
Okay. Yeah. Do you get is Bigfoot included in that then?
Oh yeah. Also? Yeah. So, yeah, he's one of our cryptids, so yes, he gets...
So I imagine people are probably calling you up to report things sometimes.
I do get some feedback, but it's mostly at paracons and cryptid events that people will come up to me and say, you're probably not going to believe me, but this is what happened to me. And so
I imagine.
I will sit and talk to them, and they generally want to do the face-to-face. Because they want to connect with you and give you their firsthand, you know, story, and that's fine too. So,
right, I get that with ghosts. Everyone has a ghost story.
Yep.
Yeah, you always run into their ghost stories, but you know, my Bigfoot guy was Phil Shaw.
Oh yes.
Phil passed. Yeah. So.
And sadly, yes. And right. Unfortunately, that ended our West Branch Bigfoot conference, which was a very nice event. They did a spring and in the fall, and they put a lot of work into that, and they built it up to a really nice conference, and it's just such a loss. There's such a gap there with Phil gone. I very much admired Phil and looked up to him. I thought he was a very good researcher and did his due diligence.
So. Yeah, and a great gentleman. I mean, we had him on the show a few times. He drove over here too. But yeah, so he'll be missed in the Bigfoot community and just all around, I'm thinking. So I see your stuff come across Facebook, different lectures that you're doing at the colleges, different presentations, sometimes on flying cryptids, but prehistoric sharks is one that came across that saw. Now, I can't imagine prehistoric. I don't know how you pronounce those things. Because they aren't they tricky?
It is a little bit of a reading it and just sounding it out and then getting it smooth. So Megalodon, that one is kind of easy, but just within the last few years, they changed the family group. So it used to be Carcharodon, Carcharodon, and now it's Otutus. It's no longer, you know, so everybody has to get used to saying Otutus. But one of my favorites from the prehistoric is the buzz tooth shark or the whirl tooth shark whose jaw just looks like a huge blade.
Oh.
And that one is actually Helicoprimus.
Oh, there you go.
Which, you know, that's one of my favorites because it's so unique looking and just such an interesting shark. But then you've got like the Ginsu shark, named because its teeth are like Ginsu knives. And that is Cruxacatus rhini, I believe. And that one was actually swimming here in North America through the Western Anterior Sea and was eating plesiosaurs and mosasaurs.
Oh, wow.
So... and it was about the size of, well, actually, any of our modern day great whites would be dwarfed by this guy.
Oh, yeah.
Megalodon would dwarf them all. Imagine a school bus.
Right.
With jaws that are can open about as wide as a school bus. There's even the adult megalodons, you could literally walk into their mouth. I wouldn't advise it, but... and then people ask, well, are those sharks still swimming in waters today? I have to say no.
Okay.
Unless they are keeping to bodies of water that, like the shipping lanes that nobody goes into, and just looking for whale carcasses. Because if they were being super predators, we would see a lot more shipwrecks. There would be a lot more carnage. If you look at what the two orca whales off of South America are doing to the great white population, they're decimating it because they're just swimming along killing for fun great whites. Now, if there was a meg out there, that meg would be going to that area to eat those other dead sharks now, but would also be eating those orcas.
Okay.
So if there are megs out there, they are... probably one in a million. And we do have reports of massive monster sharks out there. But the thing about sharks is they're all cartilage. So when they die, if they're not eaten immediately, they just sink to the sea bottom and they're lost for history.
Is a shark one of those creatures that just continues to grow as long as it lives? Okay.
And if you look at... didn't mean to cut you off, but...
No, that was it. That was my question.
If you look at ages of sharks, so they're now realizing that the Greenland shark, which stays at very low depths of water, in very icy cold water, the Greenland sharks, they believe, are up to 400 years old. So a living dinosaur.
Yeah.
Something that is almost prehistoric. Is still swimming in our waters today. So if you keep that in mind, there is the possibility that there might be big mega sharks out there, like Megalodon, that just pick and choose when they surface and what they come in contact with.
Okay. Yeah, I know. I keep hearing reports about, you know, we There's so much we don't know about the oceans. You know.
Oh, yeah.
We know more about planets than we do about, more about the moon than what we do about what's in the bottom of the ocean. So I know you're talking about prehistoric stuff and there's fossils to prove that. Yes. But I wondered, are you anticipating my question and whether there was giant sharks out there, or still things swimming around that are mammoth? So prehistoric sharks, you know, as long as we're still talking about the ocean, and this is one of them that really hit my interest, USOs.
Ah, yes.
Underwater alien bases. I was just getting comfortable with UAPs instead of UFOs, and then I come across you doing,
I did a 3 or 4 week series of classes on ufology for University Magica, which I teach for, and there had been a request by several of the students for me to do UFO topics. So I decided to break it up into different groups, and because we have a number of reports in different bodies of waters of USOs and extraterrestrial life, that was a 1 week, you know, class. Now I am no expert on ufology. I have a basic knowledge of ufology and what has been researched, what has been reported. So by no means don't count me as an expert on ufology, but the USOs is something I pay attention to because my primary research when I'm doing presentations, classes, lectures, books is the paranormal history of the Great Lakes. And with my interest being in the Great Lakes, in underwater topics, the USOs, because there are lots of reports of USO activity in Lake Michigan, Lake Superior, Lake Erie, Lake Ontario. So those reports I do pay attention to because that is something, you know, for the Great Lakes that I really do research and try to keep track of. So when I come across USO reports or, you know, somebody's like, oh, hey, we've got another one, I try to pinpoint where it is. So my knowledge of USOs is somewhat limited, but I do know that around the world, it is a proven phenomenon that is just as important to research as the UFOs.
So for the average person out there, USO stands for unidentified submerged objects.
Yes.
Instead of flying objects, submerged. And what I heard was when they enter the water, they don't even make a wake. They no splashing. So,
and if you, you know, so most modern day aircraft, if they were to enter the water at the speeds that these USOs are entering it, they would incinerate.
It'd be like hitting pavement, wouldn't it?
Right. But they can just melt into the water. And then to the pilots of our United States aircraft's dismay, they come within 30 seconds, they're re-entering the airspace and doing pinpoint maneuvers. And these are things that our jet fighters, there's no way they can do to go from here to there, dive into water, come back up. This is stuff that our fighter jet pilots have no experience in.
Okay.
They're used to flying a straight line or, you know, beveling or doing a you know, large loop, not pinpoint, you know.
Right. So are you getting reports on the shapes of these USOs?
So most of them are your typical flying saucer type.
Oh, saucer
where
shape.
It's almost a very seamless, you know, craft that can go through any atmosphere very easily, whether it's water, air, space. Don't know about landmass, but certainly with the way that they're designed, it's almost, you know, the points of them are very smooth and with a, like two pie tins put together.
Right.
But where they meet, it's very seamless. It's very smooth. So there's no drag and so that they can go into any, you know, atmosphere.
Okay. Now, I hadn't heard the reports about the Great Lakes. Things that I came across were the Cuban waters, and they maybe had underwater runways that they could they could see something from aerial shots.
So most of those reports are actually from the United States Air Force Base and Navy bases that are there. And it's from the military observing things going into the water, coming back out of the water, that we have those reports. And there's an estimation that there's a base, you know, underwater base there.
Yeah, that just blows my mind, because I could say I was just getting used to going from UFOs to unidentified aerial phenomena, UAPs. Yes. And then now I see your thing where you're lecturing on USOs. And you talked about the University Magicus?
Yes, University Magica. So I started teaching there last year.
That's a physical place?
No, it's actually an online school.
Oh, okay.
And it is owned and ran by Patty Negri, Father Sebastian, and Nicholas. He's an international ghost hunter, and they run the school. They organize the classes. As a teacher, all I do is submit my classes to them, and then it's up to the students whether they're interested in taking the class, which I've gotten quite a nice student, you know, base who always want to, you know, come take my classes. So my classes range from paranormal to cryptozoology to folk magic and hoodoo. So those are, you know, things that I discuss and teach classes on.
Do the students get to interact with you?
Oh, yes, yes. So the classes are over Zoom. So it's a virtual face-to-face. And once the class, I'm done presenting the class, which I always do a PowerPoint with my class, then the students are allowed to ask questions and comment and, you know, ask for more insight. And most of the students are, I would say, most of them are adults. We don't have any teens or children. So it's all adults, and everybody wants to learn. So.
Oh, you have. Oh, no, they don't even allow kids, right?
I think they do have some children's programming, but obviously, not a whole lot of parents are going to feel comfortable with their child taking a class on like dark magic or dark goddesses or vampirism or anything like that. So it's just a case of monitoring, you know, what your interests are or your child's interests are and what you're going to allow them to, you know, witness.
Yeah.
And I
used to do a disclaimer even for my show,
yes.
Really. I know Todd Clements put a disclaimer in the front of his book, just that it was for entertainment purposes only. But so how many credits am I going to get for you being here talking about this? Am I going to get college credits?
Oh, I think I can give you access to a couple of classes.
Okay, because if I get a few more credits, I can get my degree. So you talked about folk hoodoo. Which goes back to fight fire with fire, your book, Fire with Fire. I didn't think you had been doing anything along that line.
Well, I hadn't, just because I had already produced the books, and that series of books is, I want to say, over 12 years old. So I was focusing on the new, fresher books. But there was a request.
Request, okay. That's what I wondered.
My knowledge on different aspects. And so we just got done with the fall or the autumn folk magic spells class, which was last night. And so I have to decide what I'm going to present in November and December, because I do two classes a month. So I have to, you know, have to decide what, you know, I'm going to offer to my students.
Yeah, because you're keeping their interest, I think, by doing a variety of things. You know Lake Monsters, and you do some stuff on that too. Now, is that actual at a college?
So for the community colleges, I offer two different courses. One is the Paranormal History of the Great Lakes. And then the other one is Cryptozoology of North America. Generally, I offer those in the fall and in the spring. Now, that depends on what's going on with health crises and public safety and stuff like that. So I have to work with their schedules and just, you know, offer classes when they are, you know, accepting of them.
So paranormal in the Great Lakes, I had a map and I meant to bring it. I didn't get it out of the Lake Michigan triangle. Is that yes. What you talk about, different triangles?
So for our Great Lakes, each one of the Great Lakes has a area of interest.
Okay.
So Lake Michigan has its triangle. Lake Superior has two triangles. Lake Huron has a triangle. Lake Ontario has actually a square. And Lake Erie has a quad angle because of the way it's formed and all the shipwrecks and weird stuff that goes on in Lake Erie. It has a quad angle, so it likes to be special.
But what people probably don't realize is these triangles are result in more crashes.
There is a, so within the parameters of the triangles or the areas of interest
in the Great Lakes,
because some of them aren't triangles, there is a significant amount of shipwrecks, aircraft, UFO activity that are within these areas. So
more so than the Bermuda Triangle, right?
Well, there are all around the world, there are Devil's Triangles. That's the broad term for these areas of special activity. But everybody is familiar with the Bermuda Triangle because it's gotten so much, you know, recognition because of the Avengers that went down in it and the different giant freighters that have gone missing in it. But here in the Great Lakes, we also have those phenomenons. And the Great Lakes, if you want shipwrecks, you need go no further than the Glass Bottom Boat Tour up in Lake Superior to see shipwrecks that are, you know, in the Great Lakes. And the Great Lakes has thousands of shipwrecks.
Carson, you've been to some of these museums, I think, too, haven't you? Presenting the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Well, I haven't. The Edmund Fitzgerald is actually a part of my lectures and my presentations, but the museums are run a little bit different than the library presentations and the Paracons. And I've focused mostly on presenting at Paracons and library presentations because I do those all over the state of Michigan for library presentations. And then for Paracons and cryptid events, I go everywhere. All over the United States. But for the museums, I haven't really focused on getting into those because sometimes they just don't have the facility to offer a large, you know, group of people a lecture like that. And so that might be something I start focusing on in the next couple of years. Maybe once I get my next book
done. Oh, next book.
Which
what's going on
cover,
here?
Cover... there's two book projects that are in the works.
Oh.
One is the paranormal history of the Great Lakes, and the other is just about a little red dude that likes to hang out in Detroit.
Oh yeah.
So
I know. The Nain Rouge.
Yes.
That's, you know, I had you down for like three things that I know. Mothman, Bigfoot, Detroit, Nain Rouge.
Yes.
That I'd love to hear you talk about all three of those things when you're here. But we have covered those things, but I want to say one more thing about the strangest around the Great Lakes, and that people, it's like your compass doesn't want to work, right. And people get a loss of time. So there's weird things. Do you think there's like ley lines? What do you, or
so there,
magnetic
there's,
fields?
There
vortex?
Are,
what
there
is
are
it?
Ley lines running all over Earth. And some of them do go through the Great Lakes areas, but for the compasses not working, for navigational equipment not working, they have documented that there are certain areas of the Great Lakes where there are huge iron deposits, which throw off compasses. So one of the aspects of the Lake Huron Triangle is that in that area, there is a high percentage of iron ore. and magnetic materials, and that throws off people's compasses. So that has actually created a shipwreck graveyard there.
All right. Yeah, so there's real world explanations for that. It's not necessarily a paranormal thing.
But you know, those elements alone, when you put in water and quartz and iron ore and everything else, that can create mysterious phenomenons that we are still trying to understand and come up with an explanation for. So I can't just rule out things because we know the natural lay of the land, because there's unnatural things that happen across that land or water mass.
Yeah. Sometimes they can use this energy to manifest.
Right.
Right. You know, I had Jack Buchan on. He was the meteorologist that was recorded the radar when the UFOs were over Lake Michigan.
Yes.
And I had him on the show. He had to deal with a lot of stuff. I mean, ridicule because of coming out. And like you said earlier in the show, it's now finally the government is admitting that they lied to us. And there's some justification or whatever, vindication for these people that came forward and then were just embarrassed by the government and people weren't supporting them. I think, and you haven't really sought out validation. A lot of people that come on here, they're looking for confirmation, validation, and they find it through family, through friends, and they want to prove themselves. You haven't, to me, ever had to prove yourself. You just kind of matter-of-factly present things and like, here it is. This is the way it is. But have you had to find some help or?
Nope, because things that I've experienced, it's always when you don't have a camera on, you don't have a recorder on, and I have the story. And you can believe me or you don't believe me, but I know what I experienced, and I relate a lot to natural behavior of animals, to the psychology of the human mind, of behaviors of humans, and I take notes on all of that and file it away in my mind to, okay, so if this person was neurotic in life, they're going to be neurotic in the afterlife. So when you're at a location and you're anticipating activity, you have to come to the realization, if you're in a haunted jail, you're interacting with either the inmates or the warden or the sheriff or the sheriff's family who died there. If you're at a mental hospital, then you're dealing with either the staff who are there or the mentally ill. And there's really no reasoning with the mentally ill.
Right.
Because if they could hurt you in real life and suffer a consequence, well, now that they're dead and they can interact with you and there's no consequences for that action, you need to be prepared.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to take these things into account when you're going out there in investigating. But for me, no, I'm going to stay curious, which is what I tell everybody at the end of my podcast.
Okay.
Stay curious out there. Because when you're curious, your mind is open and you are more accepting of things. You will experience more than just putting blinders on and feeling through the dark and being like, oh, I don't want to know what I just touched, but, you know, let's, you know, see if we can get out of here. It's like being in a haunted, you know, a Halloween haunted house.
All right.
And just, you know, holding on to the person in front of you and bracing for it. No, I'm going to have my eyes open and a flashlight in one hand, a dog's leash in the other, and let's go.
Yeah, I could see you doing that. I like in your books that you actually presented real world explanations. We talked about a little bit, or hoaxes. or you, even the waves on the Great Lakes can create kind of a mirage. Mm-hmm. Or, so your eyes will play tricks on you. And you point that out in the book, how that can happen. Or other things, too. I mean, there are some real-world explanations for some of these monsters. They're just like the things that don't stop growing.
Right.
Here in the Great Lakes, even we have fish.
The sturgeons just, and, there you and go. Muskies. Yep.
Yeah, and I know some of the programs I've watched. They've found some of these carcasses of these muskies, and they look like they were shark's teeth. They were so huge.
The muskies, the alligator gar, and your sturgeon are very prehistoric looking fish. They are something out of you know the pages of history. So.
Oh yeah. And a sturgeon, I mean, they get huge.
Oh, yes. The ones that we have here in the Great Lakes, about 3-4 years ago, there was one that was caught that was 7 feet, about, they estimated 200 years old, and they will probably never catch her or him again, because once they have a experience with a lure and hook, they don't generally tend to ever take that bait again.
Yeah.
They're just very intelligent.
So there are real living monsters out there.
Oh, yes.
I mean, they're still growing. But then we got the prehistoric ones we have evidence of. You know, apparently Michigan at one time, Petoskey stones fossilized coral. So yes.
Michigan was once underwater.
Yeah.
And anybody who wants fossils, just go from Traverse City and Petoskey across to Alpena. And any of those beaches, any rock quarries, you will find they're not polished, but you will find your Petoskey stones, corals, brachiopods, all of those things. And I believe you can take up to 25 pounds home per year.
All right. So, I know there's a limit, right? And then Stonehenge was found in Lake Michigan, was it?
There, it's not really Stonehenge. It's in Lake Michigan, but what it is, and what it looks to me as, is it's underground. So it was built so that they could chase large prey down this corridor into a circular opening, like a cul-de-sac, and then your warrior braves would be waiting with bows and arrows and spears. And when the animal got into that, most of the time they're panicking. They don't see a way to get out, and that's when they could, you know, hit them with weapons and kill them. And instead of trying to chase something across the plains and catch it, this was a easier way to do it. And everybody says, oh, well, it's 40 feet under, you know, such and such underwater. Well, the shorelines of the Great Lakes change throughout history. The shorelines that we have today were not the shorelines we had 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 300 years ago, or at the dawn of time.
Right.
Because our Great Lakes were carved out by glaciers and then filled in with meltwater and rain. And at different times, the shoreline has changed. So, you know, that's a pretty good hunting strategy. Chase it into this circle by the water, and then you've got, you know, you've got fresh water there, you've got food there.
Wasn't there also a mastodon or something?
So there is a boulder that's up by Traverse City that is underneath the water, and archaeologists have seen what they believe to be a mastodon carved on the surface of the rock. And there's if you go on Google and look for that subject, you know, Lake Michigan, mastodon stone, it'll show you the picture that we're talking about. And
yeah.
Also the Stonehenge, as they call it, it'll depict, you know, you'll see all these things that we're talking about, and you can make your own decisions, but
there you go.
That's what I assume is, you know.
Right. I like your theory though, like you said about they were trapping the animals there. So I see you on Facebook, and it seems like you're always posing with some kind of celebrities. So I don't know if it's either the Bigfoot character or different celebrities. I don't know if you want to do any name dropping.
Well, I have a lot of friends, and it's always nice when I get to interact with them at events. and get pictures of them. My current favorite picture is when I'm was just up at Milwaukee Paracon, and I had my friend Barnaby Jones take a picture of. I was posing like this with the mic, and my little dog was right there, and he got a really good picture. So that's currently my Facebook page, and I was like, yes, that's an awesome picture.
Yeah.
But I'm friends with like Russell Accord from Expedition Bigfoot, Cliff from Finding Bigfoot, Chad Lewis, Kevin Lee Nelson, Barnaby Jones. These are all people that I call my friends and colleagues and correspond with. Ken Gearhart, Lyle Blackburn, all people that I look up to, that I network with, exchange notes with, talk to on, you know, a regular basis, and see at, you know, different events, and just people that I call my friends.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. I know you do. I love that name dropping too. Now, you know, I like to do a final thought, and usually it's more fun if we have more people so they can all weigh in on it. Because that's the idea, to get them talking if they haven't said anything. But
we should have brought puppets.
Yeah, we'll have our own. I got enough personalities in me to have more than one answer, maybe. So the final thought is reincarnation. Not necessarily do you believe in reincarnation. I want you to say, you have to be in reincarnated, so you have no choice. It's a hypothetical situation. So what are you going to come back as? And for you, I want to open it up to any prehistoric animal, because, yeah, we got to make it wider for you. Not just necessarily anything living, plant or animal. What would you want to come back as?
Ooh. So, okay. So for the prehistorics, I will pick three.
Oh, wow.
Giganotosaurus, which was bigger than T-Rex, or a Lyoplerlodon, which was one of the, or Kronosaurus, which was one of the prehistoric marine reptiles. It's a mosasaur. And for a flying one, Quetzalcoatl Naropia. Because if I'm going to rule the skies, I'm going to do it big and large.
All right.
But for current day, I would probably come back as a human, because I feel like, even though I might not never reconnect with the path I'm on right now, I feel like there's still a lot I would have to accomplish. But part of me just wants to rest in peace. When I finally go 6 feet under or whatever, I would like a long rest before I have to come back and start all over again. So, whoever's willing.
There you go.
Give me like 2 years of a rest, please. Just let me nap.
Yeah. If I have to come back, I probably some kind of a bird, because I have a special connection with birds. I mean, I've had three birds that I caught from outside. You know, two of them were someone's tame birds that got loose. But I re-caught them, one right in my hand, just by putting bird seed in my hand. Caught the bird like that, and then one wild bird that got knocked out of the nest and stuff.
Oh, no.
I've had a special connection with birds, but I think maybe I might come back as a plant, and there's a plant that grows through snow and ice. And I got a thing about living in Michigan here, where it's, you know, it's always cold and snowy here in the winter. So I want to get it over on that snow and ice. So I want to be that plant that grows through that. It's called like snow buds, I think. So maybe as a plant. So that would be me if I have to come back. Shout outs. I know you did some already, but I want to do a shout out to Todd Clements.
Woohoo! Love Todd.
Yeah, from
Mackinac. Hey, Todd, you're awesome.
Yep.
He's actually a good friend too.
Yep. And he just did some presentations up there that he was kind of excited about doing. And then I promote the 988 suicide hotline. I've been doing that forever. So especially the American veterans that are out there, we're losing one every 65 minutes. So
thank you for your service.
Yep. We can't have that. So 988. And if you're a veteran, just dial 1 after that. So do you have anyone else you want to give a shout out to before we get out of shout outs?
You know, I think we've covered
your friend,
a few.
You said your friend.
So, Yeah.
Your friend that hikes with you. I'd be giving her an extra shout out.
Hey, Kathy.
Yeah, you darn right.
Pointing the finger at you.
You darn right.
And a thumbs up.
That's a good friend. Upcoming and ongoing. I know you've been to a bunch of stuff already. You've mentioned some of them. Do you have more coming up still?
I have a presentation on Monday at the Caro Public Library. That's on the Haunted Great Lakes. Then I don't have anything till December, and I believe it's in Port Huron is my next presentation. That's in house in a library, and that is either the Christmas Tree Ship, the Ralph Simmons, or the Christmas Folklore, okay, covering like the creatures like Krampus and Yule Lads and stuff like that. And then it goes quiet for a while. And then hopefully in February, I'll be in Arizona at the huge Gem and Mineral Show.
You're all over the place. That's it. I love following you. So thank God for Facebook so I can follow you. For us, you know, we're on TV, Comcast 25, so this will be on TV, or UVerse 99 on Mondays, and then it repeats on Saturday nights. So my shout-out to WKTV. My shout-out to all the libraries that we did presentations for, and that would be the Wayland Library, Henneka, the Greenville Flat River Library, then all the 5 KDL libraries where we did the ghost hunting presentations. Well, I have the inspirational thought, and then the show is over, and it comes from Bob Marley, and I always try to make this relate to my guest. Mm-hmm. So a real simple one. Love the life you live. Live the life you love. I don't know anybody that does that more than you, Shatan.
You know, I love that inspirational quote. That is something to embrace, and I think I try to do that every day.
I think you do. Marley does some other quotes, too, that I really do like. He talks about the greatness of a person can be measured by their ability to affect people around them positively. I see you. You always have a smile on your face. You always affect me positively. And for any ghost hunters, cryptozoologists out there, ufologists, you're an inspiration, not only to women, to all of us, Shatan.
Thank you. Thank you so much for saying that. That means a lot to me.
You are. You always have been
a
great inspiration to me. So thank you. Thanks for being on the show.
Oh, you're welcome. Like I said, this is one of my favorite podcasts because I hope you do, like, you know, you guys show the inside of this studio, but it's like you've walked into a Broadway street or something like that. I mean, it's just awesome.
Yeah, it is cool in here.
It's really cool in here.
Thanks so much. Peace out.
Bye.
Family-owned Faro's Pizza underwrites this episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Podcast. Newly opened at 901 Gazan Parkway, Southwest Wyoming, and available at 616-483-0002.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.